it up with that, that would be great.
Yes. Okay. Yep. So, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. I've got a quick greeting just from the Al-Anon Family Group's Classic Edition. It's the first piece of Al-Anon literature written. When we prayed, it was no longer for specific miracles or tangible material benefits. We prayed for knowledge and understanding that would guide us in daily actions. And we prayed for the courage and power to act in accordance with that knowledge and understanding. We centered our prayers on finding God's will for us, whatever that might be. Therefore, the words of the AA's prayer become very important to us, which I just read before. Today we have two speakers from Australia. We have Sophie A. She's from Sunshine Coast in Queensland. And we have Nikki P. And she's from South Australia in the cold country. And Sophie's going to kick us off, and she's going to speak for 20 minutes on prayer meditation. So, Sophie, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Sophie?
Good. Hello.
Hi, Sophie.
I might just put my timer on so I can see, because I'm going to have no idea. Okay. I'm so scared.
We love you, Sophie. We're happy you're here.
Yeah, I love that reading. I know I've heard that one before. And it's so interesting, isn't it, how I was asked to speak a couple of weeks ago, and the first thought is, no way, no, 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 no. But what came out of my mouth was, yeah, I can do that. I can do that. Okay, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And I just kept on saying, yeah, okay, yeah, okay. And then I got off the phone and I was like, oh, no, oh, no. But I guess prayer and meditation for me is something, oh, my God, prayer, I just love it. Like, I just love that nobody can take it away from me. I can do it anywhere. I do it anywhere and everywhere. Because my head is a real thinker, controller, and, just obsesses constantly. And, I guess I'll give you a bit of a background on me. And so I grew up in Surrey, a suburb just south of London. And I grew up in a house where I know I was very loved, absolutely. But my dad, he drinks a lot. And I know that his parents drank a lot, and I know that my grandpa's mother was an alcoholic. Grandpa was always known for, like, he was just completely bonkers and crazy and fun. But there was always this hostile feeling around family. And we know that when we went to their house, again, like, I know I was loved, absolutely loved. But we would go to their house and everybody would be very well behaved, and we would be dressed up in our nice dresses. And I guess even to them, like, Dad would be, all of it would be an act, that we go around to their house and we behave very well, and we just have to be perfect at their house, so that, I guess, so that they're proud of us. I don't know. We just all played this role. And then we would go home and, you know, maybe there would be an argument, or I don't know. There was lots of control. There was lots of anger and at home, and there was also lots of fun, and dad, mum and dad used to have really lovely people as their friends. And, they all used to come around and drink, and it was so much fun. And we would all dance together, and it was so happy. But there was, I do feel like maybe as time went on and we moved to a new, bigger house, there were more, I guess, probably more stress on the family, and, there were more arguments and things, and, I could kind of tell that mum would all often be trying to keep it all together. And, I guess she still does that a lot. So we just went along, and, my mum's mum and dad, my nanny and granddad, we saw them a lot. And, that was just when we were at their house, in comparison to what I was just saying about my dad's parents, we were so free, and it was so fun, and we were allowed to do whatever we wanted, you know, within reason, as long as we were safe. So loved and so free, and we loved going to their house. And I remember when we used to leave their house, we would all be crying our eyes out, and we would be seeing them the next weekend. Like, and then when they were leaving, we would be crying, please don't go. Why do you need to go? And they would always say, because we live there. And so I when I look back on my life growing up, I can see that there was so much fun, and I'm so glad I can see that, and I don't, you know, there was a lot of fun, but there was also a lot of control and anger and, disease, real disease. And, I remember, from a young child, just wanting, always wanting the next thing. And I remember, well, we're from, like I said, in England. And I remember we went on holiday to Florida to Disneyland and stuff. And I think it was the second time we'd been. And every single day I wanted a new toy or a new something else. And often I got it. And, I remember that one day, I remember it so well, and I wanted this, it was like the Lady and the Tramp, the lady dog. And I was begging, please, mum, I really want this one. Really, really. And I think that was, I remember she turned around to me. It was probably just the last straw. And she said, why is it with you? I want, you know, and that has actually stuck with me, because it's so true. It is just never a truer word has been said. Like, it's always the next thing. And, anyway, so growing up, you know, I guess it got, the disease got worse, and, I moved. I was always seeking this, something someone else said earlier. I was just always behind my mum. I was just her shadow. I just did not want to be away from her. And the same with my sister. And then eventually when I went to school, I found this friend that was called Sophie as well. And again, we were just glued at the hip all the time together, the two Sophies. And that was just so good for me. Well, I thought it was good for my identity. I could just be this two Sophies instead of my own person. And, I just went along, and we're still friends today, and we're still very good friends. And, again, I guess I've got God to thank for that. I know I do. So, time would go on, and it was like, I always craved this one person that I could always be with. And like with boyfriends and things, I just always wanted someone to adore me. I didn't really even care who it was. And, I remember laying in bed at night, praying for like a certain person, like whoever I had in mind at that time. Please, please God, if anyone's listening, please, can you make him love me? So that I felt loved and necessary in this world, I guess. Time went by, and at I think 24 or 25, I got my first ever boyfriend. I'd never been open enough to, I think I was so caught on what other people thought of the people that I would choose, that even just one small comment, I'd be like, okay, no, they're out of the question then, no, because I don't have somebody else's approval. Anyway, so time went on, and I went to uni, and I did a degree, and I remember through uni I prayed a lot because I just felt so inadequate. I just scraped through school, and I hated school. And the ironic thing was, is that I couldn't stand school, but then I wanted to go back. I felt this feeling that I needed to go back to be a teacher, even though I'd spent my whole life hating school because I hated being away from my mum. Then at high school, I hated all the, like the friendship groups, and it was just so confusing. And so I thought, oh, I don't know what, I think I just really loved, I decided to go into primary school teaching, and I really liked hanging out with children. I just felt really, again, like free and loved, I guess. I think that's what it was. And through uni, I would pray a lot, please God, you know, please get me through this assignment. Or I'd be up at 3 a.m. I don't know what to write. I don't understand. My eyes would be walking along the pages, looking at all the words, and the information wasn't going in. Anyway, I would pray and pray, and somehow I came out fine. And I remember one of these times I was on school placement, and I'd been asked to, I was on my final placement, so I was quite capable at this time to arrange like a new section of the classroom and arrange it so like a role play area for the children to play in. I was just completely baffled. I had no idea. And the teacher walked out, and I remember being so desperate. I just thought, please, please. I think at the time I was praying to my granny who had passed away, please show me what I can do here. I've got no idea. And it took me about an hour and a half, I guess, I think. And I arranged this whole role play area and into like a doctor's surgery hospital kind of thing. And it looked so cool. So I'd prayed and prayed and prayed. And then afterwards I took all the credit. Oh, I did really well there. Yeah. I didn't say thank you, nothing. That's what my prayers always consisted of, and always for me to look good or for me to get my way. And anyway, I went through and went on, and later on I had a boyfriend, and we split up, and I was just absolutely broken. I just did not know what to do with myself, and it was just awful. So I decided to move to Australia. That'll help me. So I went traveling in Australia, and it was good, but I still had a collision with people, of course. And I went traveling with this girl, and turned out I met my husband now. I bumped into this guy, and I just thought, oh my God, like I was just taken in by him straight away, just his energy. And anyway, my visa was up in 2 months, and I just knew I had to go back and see him. So I went back twice to see him, and then I had to go back home in the 2 months. So I went back home, and then I just had this really, really strong feeling I had to go back. none of it made sense because I'd missed my family for a whole year. So I'd been in Australia a whole year, missed my family the whole time, wanted to be back. Then I got back and then I missed this guy that I'd only known for 2 months and just had this real strong feeling that I had to go back. And so I went back I stayed for 6 months and probably resented him for 6 months that he'd taken me away from my family, even though it was my choice. When I came back to England after that 6 months, again, like I felt completely confused. I just trying to settle into life again, and I just couldn't cope with these. I was back to this role where I'm meant to be this good teacher girl. I don't know, like this hat that I had to put on, and I couldn't mix all these people up because it didn't all fit together. I felt like I had to control and fix and make sure everybody knew what hat I was wearing at the time. And so I split up with my husband. He was back here and he was taking too long, and all those, I just remember thinking the thoughts, all the things that I've done for you. I gave up my family for 6 months. I was at him, but in my head, in conflict with, and that's normally how my arguments play out. I'm so scared of rejection that I would just be completely in my head. And anyway, so I, thank God he came to England in the end, and you know, it's not all been happily ever after, because then I guess what got me to making the steps is a couple of years later, we were back in Australia and I was starting to feel those really resentful feelings that I missed my family. I was in this room. I didn't even want to come out. We were renting a room. I didn't even want to come out of the room, and it was summer in Australia. I was so hot. I only had a fan. I didn't have air conditioning. I was just desperate and I felt alone. And I went to an Al-Anon meeting and I was hearing completely different things to what I'd heard in England. And anyway, maybe a couple of months later, I'd asked someone to be my sponsor. And well, that wasn't an easy task for me either. Like, I was just so scared. But I guess what drew me towards her is her dependence on God, on this thing that I had always been seeking when I wanted the material stuff, and or the person to fix me or whatever it was that I was seeking at the time. And I had already, she actually told me to pray. Even before I'd asked her, I asked to have a conversation with her because I was so desperate. And she just told me, just say a prayer. And I said, I don't know what to say. And she said, just, God, show me the direction, I need to take. Or it was something like that. So simple. I'd never thought of praying like that ever. And, now, I guess even when I think of things that I desperately, desperately want, there are still things that I really want. I think of them and then I think, I do believe God has the power to give me whatever is good for me. And what I want is not always good for me, and my past shows that. And I've been introduced to a meditation, which again, I'm so quick to think, oh yeah, I feel better. It's, it's better. That's it. But when I actually, like I was saying a prayer, all this week, and I just thought, that's exactly how I thought. Yeah, I feel better. Yeah, good. But then I wrote down exactly what had happened that was different for me this week. And I wrote down things like I was able to approach a situation that was quite scary and a situation where I felt criticized, and I was able to approach this person with a really warm manner. And what was the other things? Responding to people in a gentle way. I laughed way more at work this week. Like, I just had a number of things that I thought, actually, that's different, that's different, that's different. And so often I can start to think, well, God's not giving me what I want. He's not there. He's not listening. He is just waiting. And I wrote down my conception of God, and that was, it came out so quick. He's just waiting to pull the rug from under me. And if that's what I'm going to believe, then my meditation and prayer is not going to be great. I'm not going to be seeking to go to this person who I find is really scary, or this power that is really scary. And I heard recently that to see God as a friend, and that makes me more willing. I've been so bad in the past few weeks, so imperfect at my reviews, at night. And I guess it's because I'm not getting what I want. So straight away, my thinking starts going, you're not getting what you want. This is useless, not working. But when I say the prayer and I take the action, I can see what comes out of it. And I guess the main thing for me, the meditation, what it does for me is that it helps me to discern the true from the false. The thinking happens no matter what. But this non-contemplative meditation, it's the most simplest thing that I can even, it's not what I would even think meditation was or is. It is just so, I don't come out of it feeling, oh, peace. I don't. But throughout the day, I do feel my behavior being guided, because I can discern the lies in my head and work out, oh, look at that go again. Oh, here I go again. Here it goes again. And realize that thinking is not me. It just gives me a peace of mind. And and peace of mind. Yeah, that's all. I think I've done 20 minutes now, Mandy. Maybe a bit over.
Yeah, I think you have, Sophie. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Next we have Nikki, who is from South Australia, and she's also going to speak on prayer and meditation. So can you unmute there, Nikki?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you speak up a little bit more?
I'm just trolling these headphones. How about that? Is that better?
Oh, much better. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Nikki. Go ahead.
My iTunes just opened for some reason. Hilarious. Hi, I'm Nikki. I'm a grateful member from Adelaide in South Australia. I'm actually about 2.5 hours from Adelaide at a friend's house. I'm on the way to see my mum. She lives about 7 hours away. I came into Al-Anon as a 21-year-old nearly 30 years ago. Sorry, I've got the sun coming up here. And I was brought in by my boyfriend's mum. All the sane stuff in my life really has been a result of as a result of Al-Anon, really. And it's my, the amount of rebellion I have, that determines you know, the closer I am to the program, the saner and lovelier my life is. So you could say my 30-year career in Al-Anon is pretty much the, based on my closeness to the program. And the way I stay close to the program is, you know, to be sponsored, to sponsor, to serve, to secretariat meetings. I'm a group representative. You know, there's other little bits and pieces. Being a secretary these days at the moment involves a lot of technical stuff. So, making presentations for meetings, following up chairpersons, introducing people to Zoom and FCC and, stuff like that. And all of it's good for me. It's, probably the worst time was when I was, in a small country town, similar to the one I'm in at the moment, you know, with about 200 people. This town was a bit bigger, but, I went to one meeting a week and baked a resentment. Sorry, I'm just moving this because the sun's coming up. Yeah, and I had a woman at work that I had a problem with and the girls in the group obviously weren't well either because the focus would be on me and my job and how I was going with this girl at work. And they would sit and listen to me complain about Lisa and what she'd done and what I'd done and what she'd done in return. And they'd all give their advice and I'd head off and try and fix up this relationship. And all the time, this girl was wrong, you know. She was wrong and I had valid reason for her being wrong. You know, I was full of it and I was, and that was probably the worst time in Al-Anon. The rest has been, really rich, you know, probably the connections with AA. South Australia is kind of famous for AA Al-Anon camps and 5 times a year, 40 to 70 mad Al-Anons and AA members head off into the bush somewhere wild, by a beautiful, you know, untouched beach. That's one of them at the start of the year. There's also the roundup, which is, heaps and heaps of members get in caravans and head up through the middle of Australia and, yeah, meetings along the way, we take, you know, one of my favourite times was, you know, working with Aboriginal sobriety groups and in an underground church in, you know, in Cooper Pedy in the middle of Australia. And that night, you know, all the members, you know, 200, 1,000 Ks away from this area all got together, had a big camp out with camp ovens and, yeah, so some of the, you know, the most special experiences have happened through Al-Anon as well, but none of it's been fun without having a STEPS program, which has given me a higher power, you know, and I get that through working STEPS 1 to 12. I call a sponsor once a week and in between I work a daily program with daily disciplines, which include prayer and meditation. It was great to hear Sophie. My career with meditation and both of them, prayer as well, has been, you know, I've tried it all sorts of ways. I've tried churches. I've tried, spiritual acts of bathing in the Ganges to remove my sins. I've, you know, taken refuge with the Buddhahood. I've sought a lot of spirituality through religion. I've done a lot. I've spent a lot of money traveling the world looking for it, you know, and found out it's in me. It's like, it's got its own little backpack and it's attached to me. And, so I've tried it in all sorts of different ways, you know, elaborate prayers that I've got from some religion, you know, chanting and meditation through, you know, different disciplines like yoga. And I tend to overcomplicate everything. So of course I've overcomplicated prayer, you know, I've overcomplicated the steps, I've overcomplicated sponsorship, I've overcomplicated today, you know, like I didn't quite know how it was going to fall. And suddenly I was actually in a caravan this morning and I thought I was going to do the meeting out there, but it was so cold. It must be, I don't know, 7 degrees or something out there. So I'm probably waking up the whole house with my share, but yeah, I tend to overcomplicate something. So prayer's number one, the first way to simplify my life. And just like everything in recovery, I've had to get it from someone else. I don't think any of my ideas have actually been the solution. I haven't tested that, but it's pretty much the clear cut directions from sponsorship, that has been the solution for me, because, I'm not really the best at knowing myself. As much as I have spent time navel gazing and the introverted work of yoga and analysis and journal writing and all that work I have done, as much as I have done, it hasn't helped always, you know. I can take that. I mean, I find the inventory process pretty much turns me upside down. So I go from, you know, blaming that person. So I pretty much know now if I'm blaming someone else, it's most probably me. And yeah, through the inventory process, it turns me upside down. So I've been given prayers at each step. And they have had a revolutionary effect on me, you know, like step one is the prayers of step one of, being like a lifeboat to cling to, you know. For the first time ever, I'm actually trying not to go into my head for the solution. So I'm asking to take all the things that I think and put them aside and be open to a new experience. Why do I need a new experience? You know, I've got the same thoughts every time I'm praying it. I've got the same thinking, like, it's not that bad. But just repeating its work cuts through, you know, step abandoning myself to the love and protection at step two. Just this week, it healed my sleep. You know, I actually didn't think my sleep was broken. But I started this prayer and I just slept better and my dreams weren't so violent. There's stuff in my family because there's alcoholism in my family, but my brother's taken over care of my mum and, believes all sorts of crazy stuff about what I've done and what I'm doing and doesn't believe she has dementia. And, our family's in crisis and conflict. And, you know, today, possibly walking into a rageful man that wants to kick me out the house and scream at me and blame me from all sorts of stuff. And with that prayer of love and protection, as I said, it healed my sleep. I didn't realize, you know, that's not something you want to be experiencing regularly, but, yeah, my life around me isn't the way I want it to be. It's not perfect. And yeah, the third step prayer, specific prayers given to me by my sponsorship and the work I do. I don't know if any of you know the sick man prayer, but you know, praying for 14 days for someone, to have the same joy, happiness, relief, prosperity that I want for myself. And I think the numbers, you know, irrelevant, but, my brothers are in my prayers every day. and my attitude has changed to him. You know, I feel very privileged to know about alcoholism, to know and be a part of an education around it, to have compassion for a man that has to ragefully scream at his sister, and who is really frustrated and really unwell. And I can have compassion for that man and the other alcoholics in my life. Those sorts of power, the power of those sorts of prayers. I've learnt to pray on the way to meetings at work because I've got a problem with staff meetings. Like I just have had so many incidences and inventories as a result of staff meetings. So I pray to be mature, sensible and kind in staff meetings. Hasn't really worked in the last couple of weeks. I've had some crisis at work, but these have all just come out of, you know, inventory. So regular inventory, step 10. And I get knowledge of how I am the bull in the china shop or how I am the, how can you spot an alky? You know, just look at his partner or her partner, you know. I'm the Al-Anon. I'm the crazy one that's trying to round up people that are having a good time. You know, they're just having a good time, just having a drink. You know, it'll get done. You know, my last partner was really big on all sorts of frustrating stuff like, you know, let's not talk about the future. you know, that kind of hippie stuff, you know, like, just wanted to strangle him because meanwhile there's no income coming in, you know. Yeah, I try and pray before I pick up the phone from my sponsees because I've spent a lot of my career in Al-Anon. I can use the program and sponsorship and people to film myself and get bossy and I have to make an amends and apology and, you know, I come off the call or my interactions with people in the fellowship and I feel like I've said too much or done too much or that's gone, you know. But I do, you know, have a routine around it. I wrote down some stuff from One Day at a Time and Courage to Change. Prayer is the most personal form of communication. Prayer is for me, not for God. Who knows what I'm going through without explanation. With prayer, I say I'm willing to be helped. I can pray consciously, thinking, writing, creating, feeling and hoping. And finally, yeah, that's the other one I talked about. And meditation, yeah, someone told me once that any meditation's good, just any book on any meditation, any education around meditation. And yeah, I've always found meditation useful, just like prayer. Just for today, I'll have a quiet half hour all by myself and relax. I think the "and relax" bit's taken a while, but yeah, I do have a half hour at least in the morning. So I got up this morning early to have a half hour. And the longer I extend that time, the better my day and the easier it is. It's a bit like exercising my body, you know, if I the more I do it, the easier it gets. And I have found that I relax, bathe in the sunlight of the spirit, that I do get answers during that time. I do get relief from the bondage of self during that time. I've benefited a great deal from the directions and sponsorship around meditation. And I haven't always had the best idea. I like the ones where you go on these crazy trips through rainforests and stuff, but actually the one that's worked for me is very, very simple. And things don't go well if I don't do it. So I found that out the hard way. I think it takes me a good two or three hours to stop looking for the solution in my own head, in everything. It takes me a good, I don't know if it's me or it's the time I'm in or my level of recovery or what, but at the moment it can take me quite some time to stop being a little worried about things or a little fearful or a little stressed or wanting to change things or working out what I'm going to say in my head to them when they say this. I was telling a member I was with yesterday, you know, like, I want to fix up my work situation, which isn't going well again. And, yeah, I've worked out what I'm going to say when they say this, you know, they quite possibly aren't even going to say that. Yeah, my head's its own animal. Takes off by itself, has its own solutions and, way of managing life. And I'm not comfortable with not following it. You know, it's for me, there's sort of two grooves of wood and the steps enable me to flip out of that groove of wood that feels safe and comfortable. And as time's gone on that, you know, I'm in the new groove of wood. And then when I flip out into the old one, that feels weird. You know, that's what I realize is the result of prayer and meditation, a result of practice, regular practice, routine practice, practice when you're not feeling like you want the answer. You know, in my dealings with people, institutions, you know, traffic, I just find the word God useful, you know, and it just reminds me that I'm not alone and I'm not the answer. I'm not the solution. I'm a good leader. You know, I'm a good boss. I'm a good manager. You know, I'll take on everything, you know, in early days talking about these camps, you know, I would go to these camps and I'd be working out how they could be run better, how you could organize them better. You know, I'd be on something like this, working out how to format the program, you know, like I just, have a mind that wants to get in and mess with stuff and fix it and organize it and believes. I have a belief system. I like that definition of BS, you know. I have a belief system that makes me the boss, that makes my way better, that makes my way more creative. I've got this fabulous experience early in I had about 8 years in Al-Anon, which were very cyclical. You know, I was working the steps, I was sponsoring, I was being sponsored, but yeah, I had to have another relationship disaster. I was obsessed, you know, I was obsessed with this guy and he told me he wasn't really available, but I didn't really hear that. And, you know, I pulled up at his house once and there was a car in the driveway and I thought, I think that's his like real girlfriend. And I just went into insanity and I finally asked someone to take me through again. She talked about the instincts being out of whack and, told me her story. And, yeah, I started that prayer of set aside everything I think I know and, I used to imagine, because one of the worst times for me was coming out of work. And so I used to drive down this hill and I imagined that God was sitting in the seat next to me. I actually would clear the seat of all my shit and imagine an actual person and I would talk out loud because my head was so crazy. And I said, but how creative are you? I mean, I'm pretty creative. Like this is how I used to think. I'm pretty creative. Like, are you sure you're going to be able to handle this? Like, are you going to be able to come up with something as good as what I can? And I got this vision of this landscape I saw once traveling in China and I'd been painting the cart landscape, you know, the craggy, pine trees and the mountains that are sort of straight up K-A-R-S-T, cart landscape. And I'd traveled to this part of China, and it was really, really steamy and misty. So I travelled to get to this place. It was quite dangerous. And I got up in the morning and it was bloody misty. I couldn't see anything. You know, I was going to paint it and I was going to photograph it. And then I did this prayer, and the mist moved away. And this landscape that I had been painting and worshipping for a long time just suddenly appeared. And I said, okay, all right. You know, talk about ego. There you go. This planet that's being created. So, benefit a great deal from the fellowship and from this experience. Thanks everybody and take care.
Thank you, Nikki.
Thanks, Nikki. Thanks, Sophie. Thanks, Yvonne. So are we open for questions? And